This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, and now a look at the decade gone by. All this week, we've been checking in with previous guests on the program to talk about the news stories that had an impact over the past year. Now we want to take a look at the decade. It came in with great fanfare, its own slogan even, and its own special worry about a worldwide computer meltdown, which didn't happen. You remember Y2K. And while there were the highs and lows found in every decade, this one certainly had its extremes. Terrorist threats and attacks, Hurricane Katrina, near-record unemployment, the election of the first black president of the U.S., the first Latina on the Supreme Court. So much to talk about. So, to talk about this, we've invited a group of our regular contributors. Pam Gentry is senior political analyst for BET Network. She often joins us for our political chats. Asra Noumani is an author, investigative journalist, and regular contributor to our parenting roundtable. Lester Spence is a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. And Gustavo Arellano is a columnist for the Orange County Weekly, and both are regulars in our barbershop roundtable. I welcome you all. Welcome back, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Always a pleasure.
Well, let's jump into the things that you all mentioned to us. We could take it year by year, but that would be too predictable. So we'll go with the things that you all mentioned to us in our conversations on the phone. Lester Spence and Asra Noumani, you both talked about 9/11, September 11th, 2001, and we'll just play a short clip of some of the sounds from that day.
Just a few moments ago, something believed to be a plane crashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade
Center.
Welcome
back to Fox News. We have a very tragic alert for you right now. An incredible plane crash into the World Trade Center here at the...
Obviously, everybody remembers that day. Lester, why was this event so important for you?
Because it really... sets the standard for what happens the rest of the decade, right? Legislatively, we see the passage of the Patriot Act. We see the media kind of sort of lay down instead of playing its role as critiquing government actions. And then we see the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they cost approximately $950 billion and counting. And that helps put the U.S. further in a position where it's alone, foreign, alone internationally, but it's also makes it much harder for the U.S. to take care of all the domestic problems we've been facing this decade.
I certainly credit your point, but is it your view that the U.S. should not have responded militarily to this attack?
I don't think it should have responded in Iraq. Afghanistan is an open question. I don't think that it should have invaded Iraq.
Asra, what about you? September 11th was also the event that you told us you wanted to talk about first.
September 11th marked for me the symbol of this phenomena that has defined the decade of extremism in the name of Islam. We saw it then in Madrid. We saw it in London. We saw it with Major Hassan at Fort Hood. What happened to me, September 11th became the actual, frontal assault in this declaration of war that al-Qaeda had announced in the 1990s.
Pam Gentry, you selected related events that sort of resonated with you. The story or the narrative around the weapons of mass destruction and General Colin Powell's address to the United Nations. I'll just play a short clip of that speech for those who may not remember it. Here it is.
We know that Saddam Hussein is determined to keep his weapons of mass destruction. He's determined to make more. Given Saddam Hussein's history of aggression, given what we know of his grandiose plans, given what we know of his terrorist associations, and given his determination to exact revenge on those who oppose him, should we take the risk that he will not someday use these weapons at a time and a place and in a manner of his choosing, at a time when the world is in a much weaker position to respond? The United States will not and cannot run that risk to the American people.
Pam, why did that particular speech strike such a chord with you?
Well, I think that speech was really part of a bigger plan that the Bush administration was putting into action to go into Iraq. I mean, in October of 2001, when we went into Afghanistan, I think most of the world was with the United States because they felt this was a direct retaliation to the September 11th bombings. They felt that the United States was acting in protection of their homeland. I think the problem with the Iraq invasion right now and the weapons of mass destruction that just continue to deteriorate, there was absolutely none of the weapons inspectors ever confirmed or were able to find it. I will always say that probably this is the war that we shouldn't have been involved in, and that it's probably cost us the most. And I think this will be the one in history where people will look back and say, this was for naught.
Do you think that it has in part contributed to the sense of mistrust between the parties, or do you think it's just a continuation of what has been?
I think it has added to it, but I think that what really brought about the mistrust was later them changing the reason that they went in, that they were trying to spread democracy, that they were going after human rights violations. I think that is the point that trust from the American people started to falter.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We've gathered a group of our regular contributors to talk about the events of the decade that made an impact on them and on the country and on the world. And we're speaking with Pam Gentry of BET, Lester Spence of Johns Hopkins University, Asra Noumani, a journalist and author, and Gustavo Arellano, a columnist for the Orange County Weekly. Gustavo, you also picked an interesting international event or phenomenon as a signature event of the decade. You talked about the amnesty marches and the stories that exposed the Catholic Church's cover-up of sexual abuse of minors. And this is not just a U.S. phenomenon, as we now know. For example, we have a clip of the Pope apologizing to some victims of sexual abuse in Sydney, Australia. And here's a clip of that.
Here, I would like to pause to acknowledge the shame which you have all felt as a result of the sexual abuse of minors by some clergy and religious in this country. Indeed, I am deeply sorry for the pain and suffering the victims have endured, and I assure them that as their pastor, I too share in their suffering.
In this country, the Pope also met with victims of sexual abuse privately in meetings which were secret until they had already taken place. Gustavo, why was this event so signal for you?
Obviously, because I'm Catholic myself, that's why it's so important to me. But I also think what the scandal created was it forced or it taught the faithful, whatever faith you may be, to view your hierarchy, the people who lead your faith, whether they be your pastor, your minister, your bishop, your imam, your rabbi, whatever, view them with a bit more skepticism. Even though now it's a worldwide phenomenon, it really started here in the United States around 2002, 2003, when the Boston Globe wrote this epic series showing that the Archdiocese of Boston not only knew that there was sexual abuse happening within the parishes of the Boston area, but they were covering it up.
If you don't mind my asking, was this a significant news event, but was this personally painful for you as a Catholic?
Oh, absolutely. My childhood priest was a man named John Lenihan, and everyone loved Father John because he really was a great priest. He advocated for immigrant rights. He was a social justice activist. But everyone knew that he had admitted to, a decade earlier, raping a 14-year-old girl. He had admitted this.
Oh, wow.
And yet people didn't have a problem with this. And, you know, as a young child, I knew that I didn't know exactly what rape was, but I knew it was wrong, so I would ask my parents, if Father John did something wrong, why are we still supporting him? And they never had an answer to me. And then years later, as an adult, as a journalist, it really cast not the faith. The faith is beautiful. Faith is wonderful. But the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, to me, still, it's rotten at its core.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Pam, you talked about, we talked about a culture shift, as Gustavo was talking about, a culture shift where people feel, you know, that their attitude about institutions and the way they relate to institutions is dramatically changed. You talked about the tech boom.
Yes.
And you particularly focused on how it has affected politics and the way politics is practiced. Talk about that.
Well, I think one of the biggest changes was the 2004 election with Dean, when he Vermont governor, when he was running for president. And it was, I think it was almost a mistake for him. He actually started out with this little place called meetup.com, which, as we know now, went on to raise millions and millions and give him really a leg up in that Democratic race. But I mean, websites for politicians, talking directly to hopeful voters, raising money, outreach, it's just taken over. I mean, you cannot think about running for office now without starting with a website and a fundraising mechanism. And I want to look back and say that this is going to be the FDR radio chat and the Nixon debate of the 1960s. I think the internet and websites and social networking is going to be what we look back on and say what changed politics, let's say, 40 years ago.
Well, I still think about the fact that I found out that Joe Biden was Barack Obama's choice to be his vice presidential running mate as a text message on my phone, as opposed from a major network anchor or a major broadcast anchor or even a wire service report. I mean, I think that kind of is a signature event for me. But, you know, Asra, you know, one thing that hasn't changed in this country is there still are no women in the top leadership positions. I mean, there are women in cabinet positions, which is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. But
yeah, on my sort of B list of big events was Barack Obama's election, of course. And I wish inside of that also there would something about, women, you know, becoming equal partners in the political sphere here. I mean, we've definitely emerged, but leadership still is male-dominated.
Right? There's one signaling exception, the rise of black elected officials over the past decade. That increase has almost come solely from the election of black women. Hmm. So I think that we're going to see that dynamic move outward. But the real question for me is to what extent we actually see policy change as we see women in more positions. Because it's not clear to me if, for example, Clinton would have been elected over Obama, that we'd see significant policy changes for women. And that's what we really need at this moment.
Interesting, because you've also talked, Lester, about this decade being one in which capitalism, our capitalist system, our economic system, is one that people are questioning in a way that they had not in recent decades. If you talk more about that, I mean, obviously the collapse of Bear Stearns, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, which filed for bankruptcy, Bank of America buying Merrill Lynch, then there's a mega insurer AIG, the automakers requiring, or at least the policymakers making the decision to give the automakers a significant federal support along with the banks. Talk more about that, if you would.
So if you look, go back 10 years, right? So all of us are either know people who bought houses or we've bought houses ourselves. 10 years ago, the idea was that you'd buy a house, you'd maybe live in it for a few years, and then you'd buy up. And there's this idea that you just make a 10% profit at least, right? But now we know that that was all based on a house of cards, where many of us live in houses that are underwater. There are whole cities in California, for example, that are underwater. That is, the homes are worth less than what people pay for them. And that's had a devastating effect on the economy, on how we navigate. So I'm in Detroit now with family, and I'm just listening to stories after stories of people who are unemployed, people who've done everything right. Right. They went to the right schools. They got the right jobs. But now they're unemployed and they're thinking about walking away from their homes. That's unimaginable. 10 years ago, no one would have imagined we'd be talking about it.
Why don't we, in the time that we have left, talk about the culture on the whole? And there's any number of ways to do that. But one way we often sort of think about the culture is thinking about who we lost over the last decade. Major cultural figures, of course, you know, Michael Jackson, Miriam Makeba, Ted Kennedy, Eartha Kitt, John Hope Franklin. I mean, there's so many people who just in the last couple of years who we have lost. And I just wanted to ask each of you, well, in the time that we have left, is there a figure, someone who was lost to us in this past decade who just made a major impact on you? And Gustavo, can I ask you to start?
Definitely. Studs Terkel, one of the great all-time historians, a progressive man who, most importantly, though, instead of having the perspective of history from above down below, he went down and talked to the folks. To me, especially as a journalist, as an amateur historian, the way he treated history, to treat history really as from the people as opposed to the traditional great man view of history, even though he was already in his late 90s and still working, might I add, it's still an immeasurable loss.
Pam Gentry, what about you?
I am going to have to say that this decade, I think the loss of people like James Brown and Michael Jackson, I put them together because they both were crossover talents in the industry. James Brown with "I'm Black and I'm Proud." I think he brought a lot to the civil rights era and a lot to black pride in this country. And then I think Michael Jackson was probably one of the largest crossover talents nationally and internationally that we've ever seen, and probably both died very prematurely.
Asra Nomani, what about you?
I think it has to be Danny Pearl, my friend from the Wall Street Journal, who was kidnapped and then murdered in Pakistan after September 11th. You know, Danny's murder, to me, captures, you know, the casualties of our modern-day warfare. Journalists are increasingly walking around now with targets on their back. And more than anything else, I think we lost a great human being from this world, and that's always, to me, you know, something to keep us all humble for the rest of our lives.
Mm. And Lester Spence, final thought from you.
Yeah, so Michael Jackson, I still can't hear "I'll Be There" without breaking into tears. But on a journalist note, I'd like to say, give a shout out, Miley Ivins. We lost Miley Ivins. In this decade, what we've really needed more than anything else are people who are willing to speak truth to power, who are able to use their power of the pen. And then along those lines of what we miss, there's a missed moment. So when 9/11 happens and people ask the president what he wants Americans to do, when he says, "I want Americans to shop," that moment, that sentence to me, I can't think of a single sentence that if he had uttered something else other than that, we'd be living in a different world today.
Like what?
Like, go to your neighborhoods and rebuild, right? Use our resources, use the resources of the government to help rebuild our education system, to help build our roads, to help build our bridges. I mean, something else other than consumption.
Well, I thank you all so much for your insights over the course of the year and, of course, today. And we look forward to your telling us more, if I may put it that way. We are joined by Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. He spoke with us from Southfield, Michigan. Pam Gentry, senior political analyst for BET Network. She joined us from Salisbury, Maryland. Gustavo Arellano is a columnist for the Orange County Weekly in Irvine, California. And Asra Nomani is an investigative journalist and author and regular Tell Me More parenting contributor. And she joined us from Morgantown, West Virginia. I thank you all so much for speaking to us, and Happy New Year.
Same to you. Gracias.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more next year, you know, tomorrow.